Hi.
Welcome to Nuance.
Welcome to Nuance.
Hi, Danielle.
Hello, Barbara. Okay, so just for our listeners, we have a podcast coming for you, but there have been some events that have happened within the last week and a half, and we just really wanted to make a podcast, talk about the events that have taken place as soon as possible. So actually, we are meeting on Skype right now.
Yes, so if it sounds muffled and disjointed,
no,
let us know.
Let us know if it sounds even better. Let us know. But yeah.
So we took a long break. Like Danielle said, we are very, very interested in getting to the meat of what's going on in the world right now. Do you feel like we're imploding, Danielle, or it's just the U.S.?
I mean, I think that the U.S. is imploding, and I think that that's going to take a lot of other countries, or it's going to affect a lot of other countries too. So I think that everybody should be concerned right now about what's happening in the U.S., but also in Europe, because we're seeing that there are things happening in Europe too. So where do we start?
I think it's good to start with the non-response that Trump gave to what happened. And
what happened in Charlottesville.
Exactly. Okay. The response, then the non-response first, then the orchestrated response, and then his rant that revealed his real thoughts.
His real feelings. Okay, so then first off, just talking about Charlottesville and what happened. So these white supremacists decided that they were going to have a march. It was called the Alt-Right or Unite the Right or something. And started online, and then they set a date for Charlottesville. There's a university there, the University of Virginia, which was started by Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave owner, just throwing that out there. But anyway, they came up with a date, they decided when to meet, and that happened last Friday, actually. They had the first march. And yeah, I mean, it got violent in the end. And the next day on Saturday, one person died, Heather Heyer.
Can we talk about that? Because I found it really ironic, and it's really sad that the person died, but this is a white woman who died.
Yeah.
And to think, don't you find that ironic that it's a white woman, you know, the person who I imagine the alt-right is wanting to protect and whatnot, that she's
right,
the one who ended
right.
up dying.
Exactly. I think that's a really good point. But I mean, what I thought when I found out that it was a white woman who had died, and just when I saw the footage and I saw that there were a lot of white people on the ground, actually, I know one of the women who were fighting against the white supremacists on Saturday, and like one of her videos went viral, and it was really crazy to see somebody that I went to school with down there fighting. And you know, I think that this is really showing like where white people need to be in this fight, and that it is also on the forefront, and you know, standing there and protecting black people and protecting people of color. So you know, I'm also really sad that she died, but I'm like, you know, wow, like that's what it takes. Actually, you know, these people are really violent, and gotta give it to her because she gave her life for this.
So there's this article that, you know, we're talking about before we started taping by Panama Jackson, you said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It goes so deep that it's almost impossible for me to understand why, with all these years, the United States, the government, the lawmakers, you know, everybody who happens to be there, not see that the problem lies in facing this situation, because families are affected. In this article that Panama Jackson wrote, what was the title of it again, Danielle? Do you remember?
I think it's called How Trump Ruined My Relationship with My White Mother.
Exactly. And I really encourage anybody who's listening to have a read of that article. He did a great job of just sequencing how difficult and the layers that talking about race and having positions on it, whether it is negative or positive, how deep it runs. This is a man who his mother is white, right?
Yep.
His father is black, and he grew up mostly with his father. He identifies as a black person. And so
I was just going to say, because you said something like, I don't understand like how it can be this way and how tangled everything is. And you know, what I see when I see this is, and the way that like just the response has been, is that this is very much a historical experience. You know, when we talk about the Civil War, we like to think of it like with that line. I don't know if you've ever seen it where like there's this line drawn, you know, across America, and you have like the top half is blue and the bottom half is red, and it's like this is what the Civil War was. But actually the Civil War was, you know, families completely, you know, torn apart by the ideology of what the South stood for versus what the North stood for. And it wasn't, you know, you had people up here and people down there. But even Abraham Lincoln, his wife's brother fought on the Confederate side. So it was actually like families. And I think what's really interesting about that article is that it shows the way that that's happening even today. Like, you know, America is a melting pot, and we, you know, do have families that are, you know, lots of different ethnicities. You know, my cousins are Korean, I'm black, like, you know what I mean? Like, we have Puerto Ricans and white people, and you know what I mean? But, like, at the end of the day, it shows you how deep racism goes if, like, your family can still be torn apart by these ideals for what America should be.
So the article spoke to that, you know, that it's...
Absolutely.
That this family, I think, I get the impression that his father and mother didn't, the relationship didn't work out, because he says his mother is now married to a white man. And he speaks really passionately about wanting to come to some kind of understanding with his mother about her position, because she voted for Trump. In the beginning, he said he felt that she just basically didn't like Hillary Clinton. Yes. And then it escalated to where she, you know, assaulted him verbally in his own house about how, you know, Trump is the best thing since sliced bread.
Exactly. And that's something that, like, just with my own family and talking, you know, with my friends and family, is that it really is that way. It really is, like, you have people in your life, whether it's friends or family members, who, like, it's almost become like an ego thing. You see how fucked up everything is, but it's like, because these people have made this decision, it's like, either they can be like that guy who also wrote this New York Times article about how much he regretted supporting Trump. And then it's like, well, no shit. You know what I mean? You have all of these people of color, you know, the people a part of the LGBTQ community that are talking about this and have been talking about this from day one. You know, his very first speech when he was on the campaign trail was calling Mexicans rapists and stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, to face that, to face the music, you know what I mean? Or you have people who are just doubling down and just like, no, like, this is my president and you just don't understand, and the media is hyping him up and fake news. And it's almost like there's a whole new culture being built around this man and what reality even is. And it's just like, and ultimately what he said at the end of the article was he was severing contact with his mom because these conversations were just too much. And, you know, that's how I think a lot of people feel, for sure. That's how I feel with some of my family members. Just like, you can't even have a conversation because all of your arguments are coming from fake news. And, you know, like, Donald Trump has created a million jobs. And yeah, this is the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, trying to say
so
that, like,
it's,
it was,
you know,
them.
But so how do we move forward? Because for me, I'm exhausted listening to the news. And I tell you why. I feel when you look at what has happened in Germany in terms of how Germans have made, they've confronted a lot of their history in a very unique way. I think the only other country that has done this is South Africa. When in South Africa, they had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where there was a head-on collision about what the country wanted to identify themselves as after this, you know, horrific event of apartheid. I think Germany has done that as well. And you know, there are always going to be people who are racist and they will try to make situations uncomfortable. But I think what Germany has done in terms of changing its laws, like when I came here and found out that you're not allowed to wear the mustache, the Nazi mustache, you're not allowed to make the hand gesture. If you even call somebody a Nazi, you can be prosecuted. I was hearing recently that there was some discussion about the German flag being used at football matches, for example. You can't deny the Holocaust, which I think is a major thing, because I think that's what's happening in the US. You know, a lot of Americans are able to say, well, you know, just get over it, or it didn't happen.
Yeah, there's a huge sense of denial.
Yes, whereas here, there's not only just this idea that you can't deny it, you're not allowed to, like, legally, you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that there's a big cultural thing that's happened here as far as them losing the war and having other countries come in and say, you cannot deny the Holocaust. Whereas in America, I remember, I don't think it was last year, I think it was 2015, there was this book that came out about Thomas Jefferson, who, you know, is the one that started UVA. And it was like talking about just this like romanticized version of his life. And I think it was a kid's book, actually, that was talking about like his kitchen, and it was about a slave in the kitchen and how wonderful it was. So like, even today, we're still having, you know, propaganda come out that does, you know, deny the severity of slavery in the United States and, you know, why race relations are what they are to this day in the US.
I wonder, you know, if this attitude of being resistant to denials and then denying have to do with the race of the people who were victimized. Because, you know, across the board, I feel that people of brown and black skin who have been victimized, and I suppose you could say Jews as well, but the fact is, you don't get the sense that in the United States, there's also a big pushback on not denying that the Holocaust happened. Whereas, you know, it's well and good to just say, okay, slavery happened. It was just something that happened. Let's get over it. You know, so I guess what I'm basically saying is, could it be that it's because of the fact that it's black people that it's, you know, let's just forget about it because, you know, it's black people. It's a very, very difficult thing. And I just know, though, that going forward for the United States, the only way for it to be corrected is if it's faced frontally.
Yeah, and I think that's a big difference with what's happened with the Holocaust and black people today is that, you know, the Holocaust reparations were paid, you know. Germany had to recognize the atrocities that it inflicted on Jews and has to pay for it and, you know, has all of these subsequent laws because of it. Whereas, like, you know, how many Western countries benefited off of colonization and slavery and the transatlantic exactly. slave trade? And there's been no reparations from any country. There's been no acknowledgement of, you know, the atrocities and the genocide that happened to, you know, black people, that happened to indigenous peoples in America. And so, yeah, there is this ability to, you know, either downplay it, whitewash it, or just deny it. This is forcing this conversation to really like come to light right now, because black people have been talking about this in America all across, you know, the world for how many years, for how many generations. This is not a new conversation either.
No, but and I also feel, though, that having Trump as president in a weird way is the way to get the cover off the lid, because I feel, you know, I heard the news. People are like, well, you know, this is why we didn't want him as president. I feel this is exactly why America needs a president like Trump. American and you might feel offended by this, but I feel like, you know, you get the president that you deserve. America has done a lot of shit across the world. And I think what America can do with this situation is that it's being confronted with itself.
Yep.
When you look at Trump, Trump is a manifestation of everything that America is.
Yeah, yes? Absolutely. I'm not offended by that at all.
Bigger and everything is better and we're the best and, you know, we're just, yeah. I think that without a president like Trump, these issues would continue to be covered over or, you know, whitewashed or softened or nicened. When I listen, did I just say nicened? Is that even a word?
All right, we can ask our listeners.
I'm sure it's not a word. But yeah, I read something recently where they said we only got Obama because meaning the U.S. only got Obama because they had Bush. And you only have Trump because we had Obama, right? And the idea is like, you know, it's always like this ping pong tennis match game of back and forth. And perhaps right now with Trump, this is the tipping point for the United States. And it's almost like if Americans don't see what their country represents, and I feel they must feel embarrassed. Like I can't imagine what it feels like to have a president who is quick. One of the things that Trump, I think we talked about this in our first podcast, he spoke about it being important for people to name the terrorists. So we needed to say that it was Islamic terrorism or whatever it is that was causing the terrorism across the world and particularly in Europe, and that without naming it, if you don't name your enemy, then and to listen to his response to what happened in Charlottesville and not
many
being able
sides,
to name
many
it.
Sides.
And then to run around, like, what was it, 48 hours later when what happened in Spain, he was so quick, you know, to respond in his tweeting.
It shows the hypocrisy.
It's the level of the hypocrisy, though, is so deep that he is not, the people around him are not able to, and even the media, Daniel, like when you listen to the report, and I don't expect that Fox would be making these kinds of analysis, but I expect it from CNN, I expect it from, who else do I listen to? I mean, I expect it from people who are saying that they're analyzing what he's doing, and nobody makes that point, that he is quick to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, like, welcome to white America, you know, and I think that this really shows why the problem is so difficult to solve, and why white people are so important to this fight, and, you know, those people that are marching in the streets right now to try and bring back, you know, great white America, it's like, those other white people on the ground have to be the ones that are saying, no, this is a conversation we can't ignore, because exactly when white people are left to kind of talk about it or to deal with it, you see a lot of erasure happening that when then black people speak up or people of color speak up, it's like, oh, you're just complaining. Oh, you're being too sensitive. Oh, that was so long ago. You know, even this argument with the statues, which is like what the whole, you know, protest was about, is like, oh, you're taking away our heritage and our history. And it's like, no, those statues only went up during Jim Crow to bring back this nostalgic, you know, we almost won type feeling in the South and across America. Like, you know, but that's something that as people of color, we're ignored when we speak up. And so, you know, we need those white writers, those white, you know, even just family members, friends having conversations. It's like, listen to people of color and amplify.
What do you think, though? I mean, when you consider that Obama was there for 8 years, what do you say as an American was his contribution to racial issues?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, what I think when I see Obama racially, like what he did for our country, is that he showed that like we can do anything. We can get to the highest position in the United States. And I think just to grow up, you know, with Obama as the president, whether you're, you know, a teenager like I was when he became president, or, you know, a young, you know, child, to see this black man as the leader of, quote, the free world, this was something that was really incredible and really, you know, life-changing for many people of color and especially black Americans. And I think that that's one side of it. And then the other side is, of course, that people really looked at him and hated him for being in that position and didn't see like the progress that America, you know, maybe has gotten to.
So what I hear you saying is that his presidency was just about showing everybody that it's possible. A black man is possible.
I'm saying for some Americans, absolutely. And I think for other Americans, it was like, how have we gotten this low? I think a lot of people really looked at it like the fact that there is a, you know what I want to say, in the White House.
Yeah, but you know, the thing for me with Obama, I remember, what's the name of that black football player? The one with the really cool afro.
Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah. When Obama said that he was making a speech at some army base somewhere, and he made a point that, yeah, Kaepernick should do his protest, but, you know, he should also bear in mind that there are other people who are hurt by the protest. By his protest, that people are going to be. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but I think what I read about it was more that Obama had defended Kaepernick.
I don't want to speak out of turn because I know that I posted it somewhere on Facebook, because it was an article, and he was just pandering. He was pandering big time. And I remember thinking to myself, but if he is a black president and he is not able at this point, and bear in mind, this was the last probably months of his presidency in his last term. So it wasn't that he was going to be losing an election. And let's be honest, politics is really about that. Winning an election is really about saying the right things, right? Yep. He was just seriously pandering and not calling it for what it is. And I am a Jamaican, and so, you know, but I just feel like if I was an American, a black American, I would have problems with Obama, because I feel like his 8 years really didn't do anything for, you know, dealing with some of the issues. But again, I don't want to be unfair to him, because there were challenges.
I hear what you're saying. To me, Obama is just like, it's so multifaceted. And I just, you know, I'm not going to deny the good of having a black president in the United States like did for our country. But I absolutely hear what you're saying. And that was one of the main criticisms of the black community towards Obama, is that he wasn't loud enough. He wasn't unapologetic enough. You know, he really did, and not even with the whole race thing, but just with everything, with Obamacare.
Generally,
and with he was, you know, but at the same time, I think like that was our first black president. Like, we cannot hold him. I don't want to say we cannot hold him to the standard, because absolutely we can. But like, of course he's going to make mistakes, and that's going to be, you know, really amplified by the fact that he was the first black president. So, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, both sides.
Yeah.
Many sides.
I don't remember which comedian it was, but there's a comedian who made a point that, because was it, I don't remember who it was, but they made a point that he became president and he got it for 8 years. He should have just done every single thing possible, even, you know, whatever extreme measures to ensure, because the reality is that it could be that there is not going to be another black man in the White House for a very, very long time, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I don't want to belabor the whole thing. Bottom line, going forward, though, how do you see it working out? I mean, obviously, Trump will have to resign, or to be honest, I feel ashamed. I really feel ashamed for America. Like, I really feel like it's embarrassing.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think what part of it, too, is the fact that, like, we're living, I feel, and I don't know, maybe you know what I'm talking about, but I feel like I'm living in two realities right now. Like, I feel like there's reality, and then there's, like, this manufactured reality from
Trump reality.
The Trump administration. Exactly. And so, you know, I think that in reality, the logical thing that would happen at this point, from the way that this man, you know, one woman was killed and multiple people were injured, and, you know, like, for his response to be like, oh, there was, you know, violence coming from many sides, and, you know, then to be like, take a stronger stance and then turn around and be like, you know, I didn't really even mean that, like, basically, like, you know, the alt left and everything that he said, it's just like, the logical thing to me would be that the country forces him to resign, that he is definitely impeached, and mm-hmm. that whole process happens. But I think that in the Trump administration reality, anything could happen. I know that some people in Congress have started petitions to impeach him, and this is like maybe the second time that it's happened, but okay. At this point, it's still a Republican rule within our Congress right now, so you know, a lot of people would have to really say something. But what I think is that although we're seeing a lot of people defend him, I think behind closed doors, a lot of people are trying to get rid of him, because not even his party wanted him to begin with. And his base, these, I want to say psychos, I don't want to say that, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's don't
like
middle say America. That. Middle America. I just feel like there is a whole swath of people who are just, they have been inundated with fake news. There's no counter to it. I think even that, going back to that article by Panama, I think he mentioned that his mother, she, all her news came from Fox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you create a really dangerous environment if you only listen to one version of any story.
Yeah. So what would your solution be?
Like I said on onset, Danielle, I really feel is they have to change the laws. Why am I saying we? But they have to change the laws. Well,
we're all a part of this. No, I hear you.
I don't feel like I'm a part of it. I'm sorry. My identity is Jamaica first, and I'm watching the Germans and trying to support them as much as possible. But mm-hmm. I feel like what Germany has done in terms of like just saying, look, you're not allowed to use the signs, because like I was saying before we started the podcast, your right of free speech is not always a right that you get to use as any way you want. So if you have a very awful history, attention needs to be paid to that. And so if your history says that, you know, there is this deep racial divide and there is this deep prejudice, you can't have in today's world, 2017, statues that represent all of that past.
Yeah.
It's just, it would be like, think about it, Daniel. It would be like we are walking down Stuttgart and there is a statue somewhere of maybe not Hitler, but, you know, one of his second, third, fourth right-hand men. Like, it's just ridiculous. And to me, the fact that America and Americans, whether they're black or white or, you know, in between, haven't just like marched on the White House and say, look, this is shit, we're not doing this anymore. It's just, it's mind-boggling. It's embarrassing. And the audacity. I'm pissed off that America tends to do that business of, you know, we're the world police and you have to do this. And speaking as a Jamaican, America has done a lot of things in the Caribbean, in Jamaica, in my country specifically, to really disrupt and in their way make it better, make it great. They have no moral authority. They never had any, in my opinion. And now it's completely done. And you ask the question, where do we go from here? What do I think? Trump is not the one who is going to change the laws. I really think if America's holds, if the states hold, because I was reading recently that Los Angeles is looking really like they want to pull out, that they've made deals with the EU regarding the environment and so on that no other state in the United States have made. So you have to question, why are you doing that? It's like they're operating as a country in and of itself. So if the United States holds and Trump does get to the end of his first term and there's another election, but the question is, what's the alternative? Because the Democratic Party is doing jack shit.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. So I feel like you're getting into like another, a whole nother podcast here.
Yeah, we did. So let's not go into it. So
what I just wanted to say is that like, so I'm from the East Coast, so I don't know enough about California. But one thing that I thought about when you just gave the scenario of us walking down, you know, down the street and seeing, you know, Nazi statues is that like, what do we actually see, Barbara? We see those stumble stones. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. The cobblestones.
The little stones that are outside of, you know, houses that are still here today that say the names and the birthdays and the death dates of, you know, all of the people who died in the Holocaust. So actually, if you look at Germany and use Germany as a reference point, it's like, not only do they not have statues, and this isn't to say it's perfect because, you know, yeah, I know in Berlin, a lot of people talk about the fact that many of the streets are named after, you know, colonizers and Nazis, but like what you also see in this country that you do not see in the US are, you know, places outside of plantations that have the names of every enslaved person that ever lived there and ever worked there. And how much did we contribute to the society?
You know exactly. What I'm saying? You'd never, can you imagine? I mean, I've just lived there for a couple of years, but you feel it here that it's just simply not, it's not tolerated in any way. And there is no discussion. No, you know, and I think for the United States, that's what they're going to have to do. Mm. And there are no, but there is a discussion that I heard, I don't remember what station, but somebody was saying that after the Civil War, the people who lost never really accepted that they lost. And so there was no reconciliation, right? There was no acceptance that, okay, we lost and it was wrong. They basically just retreated and they were like, okay, fine, fine. We take our guns up and we go back home, but we're still not into it. So it was never like they felt like, okay, we were wrong. We lost because we were wrong. And I think that's what's happening in the U.S. There's never been that kind of, let's look at it. This was an awful wound. And in order for us to move forward, this wound will have to be cleaned out. And you have to put some antiseptic, in Jamaica we call it Dettol. And then we have to put some stitches in it. And perhaps then we can start healing.
Yeah, because I think what happened was, is after the Civil War, the Union troops did stay down in the South for about 12 years. And that's like our, quote, reconstruction period. But like I said, with the whole Abraham Lincoln thing and using his family as an example, or the article, is that so many people, it was just interwoven into the families. You lost family members, you lost friends. And I think that there was just a lot of pain on both sides as far as white America goes, that they just ultimately ended up being like, you know, the South resented the North for being there. And, you know, after 12 years, they were like, you know what? Yeah, let's close this wound up and let's leave and let you get back to what you're doing. And then what happened was Jim Crow. And then, of course, the Civil Rights Movement. So, yeah, it's exactly what you said, that we need to like look at this and not, this isn't like a white people conversation where it's like, okay, well, how can we make you white supremacists feel better? Like, oh, leave you alone. Like, the white people really have to also stay strong, stay tough, and listen to, you know, the black people in America and people of color in America. Because, you know, even if you look at the Jews accepted that, you know, reconciliation that was offered to them and those, you know, reparations and
that
the
were
apologies.
Made to them and the apologies. But you see, those apologies, they were bedded not just in word, they were legit actions.
Exactly.
They're financial actions, actually, where, you know, the reparations were literally paid to them. So,
and are still paid to them. So, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take black people continuing to be strong and continuing to be loud about what we need and what we, you know, will stand for and not back down from. And then, you know, the white people that do get it, amplifying that and working, you know, to have conversations within their community to make this happen. Because at this point, it's like we started off this podcast, things are imploding. And
Yep. And I don't know, maybe what we should pick, we pick up this particular topic in another podcast. We pick it up with the Democrats, because we can talk all we want till we fall asleep. We can say Trump is madness and, you know, what he stands for. But if there are no clear alternatives, if the Democratic Party is not presenting something that blacks can line up effectively and honestly behind, and for all those voters that went over to the Republican Party because of Trump, how is the Democratic Party responding?
Ooh, that's a great topic. Okay, let's talk about that. Also, we can ask our viewers, like, what do you think?
So let's talk about Spain.
You're heading to Spain, aren't you?
Yeah, we're heading to Spain and we're traveling nevertheless. I feel very, very, very sad. You know, when I saw the pictures, I just thought, this is basically like I said, walking down Koenigstrasse and a car just turns in and drives and just kills people. But where we're going is not Barcelona. We're going closer to Portugal, right at the border.
Okay.
What was going to happen, Danielle?
To be honest, I think once again, it goes into until these problems are solved at the root, we're going to keep seeing this stuff. And I'm happy that you're still going on your trip because ultimately we have to keep living our lives.
Yeah. Would you go? Like, that's the thing. We had a discussion in our family about it. And I was like, look, we could sit here and just be, okay, let's have a staycation because there was a terrorist. And then we go to Stuttgart and there's a terrorist attack. Or God forbid, you know, in our little village, something happens. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. I think the absolute thing to do is simply to live your life. And that's what we're about, you know. So we will see you when we get back.
All right. Yeah. On that note, thanks, Barbara. I'm glad we got to talk. And thank you to everybody who's listened. I know it's been a while, but we are back. And this was Nuance.
See you soon. Bye.